As we look to chapter 11, again, as I've mentioned a few times, sometimes the chapter divisions come in a place where a discussion is really ongoing, and I believe that is the situation between chapters 10 and 11. And the first part of chapter 11, as we have it designated, is still talking about some wisdom and proverbs, which we looked at in chapter 10, but we're still looking with that in view. And as we mentioned, in proverbs like fashion, you think of the book of Proverbs, there are many different topics that are discussed briefly by the author and then going on to another topic. And this we see through chapter 11 and verse 7. And then beginning with chapter 11, verse 7, we find the final wind-up and conclusion of Solomon's writing. The entirety of this chapter, and set the stage for the last class, which will be chapter 12. And so we'll switch gears between the wisdom and the Proverbs and get into the final section of Solomon's writing this evening. The first six verses really tell us about dealing with the uncertainty of life. Let's just read these verses. Ecclesiastes 11 and verse 1. Cast your bread on the surface of the waters, for you will find it after many days. Divide your portion to seven or even to eight, for you do not know what misfortune may occur on the earth. If the clouds are full, they pour out rain upon the earth, and whether a tree falls toward the south or toward the north, wherever the tree falls, there it lies. He who watches the wind will not sow, and he who looks at the clouds will not reap. Just as you do not know the path of the wind and how bones are formed in the womb of the pregnant woman, so you do not know the activity of God who makes all things. Sow your seed in the morning, and do not be idle in the evening, for you do not know whether morning or evening sowing will succeed, or whether both of them alike will be good. So there are two topics really underneath the heading of dealing with the uncertainty of life and how to deal with it properly. And the first one is giving. We find a figure of speech used in verse 1 that we might wonder about, casting your bread on the surface of the water and then it returning after many days and finding it. But verse 2 gives us a more clear indication of what's being discussed when it says, divide your portion to seven or even to eight. So it's taking what you have and sharing it with others. And past the perfect number of seven and even going to eight, sharing with as many as you can. And what's kept in mind in giving as well as the other topic in this section is that don't let the uncertainty of life keep you from giving. So how is it that the uncertainty of life could keep us from giving if somebody has a need and approaches us? Yes, Anita?
Fear that we won't have enough for ourselves.
Right, as Anita said, fear we won't have enough for ourselves because we don't know the future. We now, year from now, 10 years from now. And so we may have the idea that, well, I really do have something in the bank. I have something I could share, but, you know, what if I need it down the line? So what is this idea about putting your bread on the water? What's it say that we need to trust in? Well, what's the rest of the verse that should give us confidence to go ahead and share? Bruce?
As he mentioned, even in the Proverbs and I think other places in Ecclesiastes, that those who share, those who give, if they have a need, it will be returned to them because people see that in them.
Right. And so you'll find it after many days. So instead of thinking, oh, you know, maybe I'll need this next month, next year, 10 years from now, somebody right in front of me has a present need. Maybe they need food, they need clothes, they need necessities. I've got those, and I've got more than what I need. And so I shouldn't be thinking, well, I'd like to help, but, you know, I might fall on hard times. But the other giving person trusts in God that He will supply your needs. And there's some passages in the Old Testament, in addition to Ecclesiastes, that point out the kind of spirit that a giver should have. And of course, it's the same as what Jesus presents in the New Testament toward the poor. Deuteronomy 15 and verse 10, "You shall generously give to him, and your heart shall not be grieved when you give to him. Because for this thing the Lord your God will bless you in all your work and in all your undertakings." So it's, again, the same idea. You do what you're supposed to do, and you trust in God. He'll take care of you. He'll bless you for being a generous person. Verse 11 then says, "For the poor will never cease to be in the land. Therefore I command you, saying, you shall freely open your hand to your brother, to your needy and poor in your land." So just like that we see today, that, you know, there's always going to be those that are poor, always going to be those in need. That's going to be an ongoing situation, a fact of life. But we see the instruction to freely give, and don't regret it. Don't grieve over it. You know, God will take care of you. Also in the Proverbs in chapter 19 and verse 17, "One who is gracious to a poor man lends to the Lord, and he will repay him for his good deed." So again, the promise is made to the giver that the Lord will repay you for helping. And when you're helping a poor man, it says you're really lending to the Lord. And so that needs to be kept in mind. And of course, that's the same thing that Jesus talks about in Matthew 25, that when the person said, "Well, Lord, when did we see you hungry and help you?" But the point that Jesus made, that you're giving to me and you're helping me when you're helping those in need. And so Jesus taught in Luke, the sixth chapter, the same principle as in the Old Testament. In Luke 6 and verse 38, "Give and it will be given to you." So you put your bread out in the waters, you divide it to among seven or eight people, whoever might need it. "Give and it will be given to you. They will pour into your lap a good measure, pressed down, shaken together, running over. For by your standard of measure, it will be measured to you in return." So you be a giving, generous person. When you fall into need, it's going to be there in abundance, and as much as you could pack into the container, and over to have that kind of trust. We all live with uncertainty. That's just the way that life is. We don't know the future. We don't know tomorrow. But the scriptures tell us, don't let the lack of not knowing what's going to happen tomorrow keep you from giving today and trusting in God's promise. Further comment on this? Somebody'd like to add? Yes, Scott. Oh, Judy. Okay. Thank you. Right. Yeah, it does work. We don't do it to get back, but, you know, I certainly never have seen it fail to me, you know, to give when I had to give it, and I've been in need, and brethren especially have been helpful to me at those times when there's been other times that I could be of help to others. Taylor? Right. Taylor is stressing the fact that a person that gives is not just relying upon themselves, but recognizing that there's other help that can come, and especially through God. And so, therefore, a person doesn't just have to trust in themselves and their own foresight to be able to make decisions about giving. Dale? Right. There's certainly perversions that Dale's pointing out of what we're talking about, where people make false promises that God doesn't make. When people get on television and so forth and tell you to send seed money, and they're going to help grow and make you wealthy because you're giving to a certain ministry. But we're speaking in terms of meeting somebody else's need that they have. And our needs being met. That's what we're speaking about, and that's what God is promising. He's never there because you've helped poor people. He's saying, let go of what you have in excess now, and later on, I'll make sure you have what you need. Artie? Artie's pointing out from Hebrews 13:2 that we don't know the blessings that are going to come and who we're giving to, and some have entertained angels unaware. So we need to be thoughtful and to be giving, because blessing, we will be blessed if we do so. You know, it says in back to Ecclesiastes chapter 11, verse 3, you know, fits in with the giving section, I believe. It just showing that there's a whole lot of stuff we just can't control, and we just have to accept that fact and live with that fact. You know, if the clouds get full, they're going to rain. If humidity gets to 100%, it's going to start raining. I mean, we can't, those that predict the weather can say it's going to rain or not rain or whatever, and sometimes they're right, sometimes they're wrong. But if the clouds get full, if it gets to that point, and if a tree falls down, it falls where it falls. And this passage made me think about one time when we lived in Swayze, looking outside, and it was straight line wind, was really strong, and out by the garden that we had, there was a tree that was just pulled up, roots and all, right in front of my eyes, and just deposited. You know, and it fell where it fell. You know, wherever the wind picked it up and it fell, north, south, east, west, it fell. There was not going to be any control that anybody could make over where that tree fell down. And so when we think about simple things like that, it shows us a lot of things are just out of our hands. But they are in the hands of God, and certainly there's an emphasis on that even in this section. God is brought into it, as I've emphasized. When you study through a section, see if God's mentioned or not. And of course, before this section is finished in verse 6, in verse 5, God is mentioned. So there's the activity of God, as Taylor was stressing. God is at work. God's in His providence. It's not just up to me to provide for me. God is at work. And God can use me to help others. And He tells me to trust that when I need something, He will use others to help me. Yes, Dale. This is true. Dale said when a person dies, it's as certain as a tree falling. It is what it is when a person dies and nobody can change it. Yes, Lois?
When you look at the cloud, the idea was when a cloud's full of rain, the cloud does not try to hold on to anything.
That's true. As Lois said, a cloud just doesn't try to hold on to excess. It gets full, it lets go. and lets go. And we need to be like a cloud too, that when we have an abundance and somebody has need, you know, that the scriptures, what they condemn certainly is not wealth in itself, but what we do with it and our attitude and how we handle it. You know, you have the rich fool that had much laid up for many years and that just looked only at his barns and building bigger to hold everything instead of thinking about doing any sharing. And of course, his life was over that night, and it didn't matter how much he had stored up because he hadn't been rich toward God with what he had. You think about the rich man and Lazarus. Of course, the situation was that Lazarus was there laid by his gate. And so there was he had wealth. The problem wasn't the fact he fared sumptuously every day in and of itself. The problem was he did that while somebody was laying at his gate that didn't even have the necessities of life. And so therein was the problem, and therein was the difference between being in torment and being in paradise, was what was done with what a person had with the opportunities set in front of them. Anything further? Well, the second part talks about, in this section, about sowing. And we could talk about doing any kind of work and maybe being so concerned about any kind of uncertainty. But particularly here, it's using the agricultural life. And whether a person is planting season or harvesting season, trying to watch the weather and try to figure, and not talking about somebody just trying to consider a forecast, but just being sort of paralyzed by the fact that, I don't know if I'm going to be able to do this today or not. And how many of us have done things on a day when the weather forecast said you're not going to do anything, it's going to be a washout, and we've gotten up and it doesn't look that bad, and then we put in maybe a full day outside, and if we just listened to the forecast, you know, how much would we have gotten done? You know, so I think this is the idea, and all of us have, and maybe it's even looked a little bit threatening out, and so I'm sure Dwayne and Jeff and Chad, others that put out crops in the field, could probably attest to the fact there might have been days they thought, well, I may not be able to work in the field today, but able to get something in because they just go ahead and make a determination. Jeff, have you ever had one of those days where your weather looked a little bit iffy, but you went ahead and got a lot of work done? You know, we just, there's things beyond our control, things beyond what we know. And so whether it's sowing or harvesting, said just get busy. And you don't know if your seed's going to do better if you plant in the morning, plant in the evening. Maybe it'll turn out best either way. So there's things we just don't know. So it's just up to us to do the work. But verse 5 is really the, you know, puts it all in perspective. And so many times Solomon said in Ecclesiastes, you just don't know the activity of God. And he said, you stay up all day, all night, no rest, and you try to figure out the activity of God. Man is never going to be able to figure it out. And a couple examples are given. We can understand them just as clearly now as 3,000 years ago. You don't know the path of the wind. You think about these tropical storms and hurricanes. With the scientific equipment, do we really know where they're going? You know, the path changes right up to landfall many times. And even the experts that using all the technology they have, they don't know the path of the wind. So it's still just as true today. we may have ultrasounds and other things to look at a baby forming in the womb, formed in a pregnant woman. The key word is how. Not that you can see that it has happened, but how does it happen? How does that happen? And how does many other things besides the bones get formed to when that baby comes out, can see and hear and breathe and have everything formed. So it's so man, if he gets to thinking he's pretty smart, needs to think again, because man doesn't understand the activity of God. And so God is the one that controls the future. God's the one that's involved in what we call providence, because he sees ahead. And so it's up for us just to act when we see we have opportunity to act, and particularly here to get some work done, because we just don't know what's going to happen in the future. Yes, Bruce.
You mentioned earlier, you know, from verse 4 and in verse 5, explaining that, as Taylor mentioned, with, you know, God in the background, sometimes we just get paralyzed with what ifs, and so we don't do anything. Instead of moving forward, knowing things that need to be done, we just get a job or teaching someone or whatever. We think, what if this happens? So we don't do anything.
And Bruce mentions that sometimes we get paralyzed with what ifs in life, and therefore don't get something done, whether it's of a worldly nature, something we need to do, or a spiritual nature, like teaching someone. And so... so that's the point. Don't get paralyzed with what if this happens and that happens, and God's the only one that it does know what's going to happen, and we can't control what happens. And so we just need to get busy when we see we have an opportunity. My mother-in-law Darla said she knew some people like that sort of just sat on the porch in the morning and, oh, it looks like it's going to rain today, or it's too windy or whatever, and never got anything done out in the field. So, I mean, there certainly, we all might think about different ones that were just so hesitant to move forward to get something done, and then nothing got accomplished. We say nothing ventured, nothing gained. So Solomon says, venture out, get busy, do work. Don't let uncertainty hold you to. So this is the last bit of the wisdom section and the Proverbs that are being put forward. So let's go ahead and introduce this last section and look at the first part of it. There's really two parts to the conclusion here, chapter 11, verse 7 through chapter 12. First part, we see here right at the end of chapter 11, enjoy your vain life. And then the second part we see in chapter 12, you know, so the modifier, we already see in the end of chapter 11 that we need to have a modifier, but it's really expanded on more in chapter 12, and specifically that the purpose of life, the purpose of this vain life, as far as it being vain from a worldly perspective, the purpose of life is to fear God and keep God's commandments. And so here we find summed up what life's all about, and the end of the experiment that Solomon undertook in the beginning of this book to try to search through life and to try to figure it out. How to be satisfied, how to be fulfilled, how to be happy, how to spend his time under the sun in the best way. And especially, I think this last section is written to young people. I think I mentioned last time we studied that a lot in Ecclesiastes won't be understood as much until a person's experienced more in life, which I still think is true. But the point is that a younger person needs to trust the inspired wisdom and apply it early in life, because that's going to be the life that's best lived. Now, Ecclesiastes can still help you if you've never followed its principles and you're 50 years old and you're first reading it. It can help you the rest of your life, but you've already missed so much of the time that the book of Ecclesiastes could have helped you if you had seen it sooner. And so some of us here are like me that grew up in a home where I knew these principles. They were taught to me from a child. And that's been a great advantage to me. Some of you didn't grow up with that and wish that somebody would have taught you while you were sitting on their knee and taught you these kind of principles about life, because you had to go through a lot of hard knocks and a lot of adversity that wouldn't have come. A lot of choices, bad choices made, and consequences that if you had had the wisdom of God to guide your life, you wouldn't have had to suffer through all that. So for those that are here, especially we got the high school class, young adult that are here, really, you know, tune in. This is for you for now and to take with you through life. It's especially written for those who are young to gain from what is written and to put it into practice, as we'll see, just as soon as possible. As soon as possible, put these principles into practice, and you'll live the most fulfilling life that you can under the sun. And start that out from youth. Now, verses 7 through 10. The light is pleasant, it's good for the eyes to see the sun. Indeed, if a man should live many years, let them rejoice in them all. Let him remember the days of darkness, for there'll be many. Everything that's to come will be futility. Rejoice, young man, during your childhood, and let your heart be pleasant during the days of young manhood. Follow the impulses of your heart and the desires of your eyes. Yet know that they'll remove grief and anger from your heart. Put away pain from your body, because childhood and the prime of life are fleeting. So the emphasis, especially to the young, is, and for all of us too, is to rejoice in life, and especially rejoice in youth. Yes, he repeats for how many times, I don't know. Life is vain, life is futile, chasing the wind. Everything's going to come to that. But as we've stressed throughout, that doesn't mean God doesn't want us to enjoy life. God created us, put us on earth, put us under the sun, so we would enjoy life. And that's what he wants us to do. Even though there's many dark days, and we have the warning, and we may not understand those dark days until we get older, that there's going to be many of them. But they do come. But despite the darkness, despite the negative things, despite what the writer calls the evils under the sun, the troubles, the heartaches, the trials, despite all that, enjoy life. That is the message that we need to gain. Yes, some people have told me, yeah, it's too negative of a book, or it's discouraging to study it. But if you really would look at it in the way that it's written, it's meant to be a book that's realistic, tell you what to expect in life, and puts as positive of a spin on it as you can ever find anywhere, even after talking about all the vanities and futilities. The message is to enjoy it. Yes, Bruce.
Several times in this book he talks about enjoying life. And I think sometimes we take for granted each day. I mean, we get, again, kind of paralyzed. We're thinking about what's going to happen tomorrow, or we haven't pressed about what happened yesterday, and we miss the day. And I think that's part of the point here. Rejoice in the day. There's going to be dark days.
Right. So Bruce is emphasizing to take each day, and there's going to be dark days, but to enjoy. the good days that God, you know, sometimes we need to get up in the morning, hear that song, "Here Comes the Sun," da 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 da, have that kind of attitude. Here comes the sun. Here it's a new day. Get up, enjoy it. And that's what God would have us to do. A new day is a new opportunity to live on the earth and to enjoy the blessings of God and to be His child and to accomplish His purposes for us. And even though we're warned, remember the dark days, there'll be many. It's not sugarcoating life. You know, it's telling it as it is, and not like the health and wealth gospel people that say, you know, if you serve God, it's all going to be roses and no thorns. No, that's whoever preaches that hadn't studied and preached Ecclesiastes, because that's not the message. So young men are told to explore life, you know, follow the impulses of your heart, you know, and see the world, as it were. But also warned at the same time, that doesn't mean you just do anything that comes to your mind. And here we're introduced to something that's mentioned in chapter 12. There's going to be a judgment day. So enjoy yourself. Follow the desires of your heart, but remember there's going to be a judgment day. Don't just abandon yourself to any desire. Remember the call for how you live, even in your youth. So live it with that in mind, and with that sober thought in mind, that you're living it in the presence of God and preparing for judgment. But, you know, if you want to see the world, and to whatever extent you can, you know, see the world, enjoy the world, explore, find the kind of things you like to do and do them, especially while you're young. And then young people are encouraged to remove the negativity, for youth is fleeting. Youth or childhood here is, I remember when, long time ago, when my hair was more of its natural color when I came to the world, found this. Most Hebrew children would have been those with black hair. So literally the word was enjoy your life in the time of your black hair. Because the time of your black hair is... But there can be a lot of discouraging things that come even when somebody is young, even a teenager, early 20s or so forth. But the encouragement to young people is, don't get overwhelmed by these things. These things that could just overwhelm you with grief or sorrow or even anger. Maybe because of bitterness about circumstances or things that you faced. You know, it's a time to take this negativity and push it to the side and enjoy your life. Because childhood and the prime of life, the time of the black hair, it's fleeting. It's going to be here and it's going to be gone. I can't help but think of what our son Caleb's going through right now. He had a high school friend at Oak Hill that committed suicide a few days ago. And so it's been really hard for Caleb to deal with that, having someone his age, 21 years old, and their life is gone. Who knows what got to them to such a point that they despaired of life to take their life. But obviously things did. And so the writer's saying the kind of things that could lead to something like that, a person needs to be able to remove them and to set them aside, lest they be overcome by those kind of things, and to put life in perspective and to enjoy it and not be weighed down, as anybody could, young or old, be weighed down with the cares of life. Yes, Bruce.
Be careful here, be careful there, and they're not to hinder us, but they're to protect us.
Bruce is emphasizing that God has given us limitations in His Word, that as we seek our choices and try to live life that keep us in a zone where we can remain happy, and these things are not put there just to for no reason, but for our own good. But we're going to be emphasizing in the next class, of course, remembering the Creator in the days of one's youth. And there's three things that are affected, as I would understand it, and especially that the young need to concentrate on. You know, remembering God in your youth translates into worship, into from childhood a life of praise and thanksgiving. Remembering God in the days of one's youth translates into obedience, as one recognizes, as Bruce just said, that the wisdom for living that's contained here, and one from childhood makes a decision to practice the wisdom of God and to be obedient to the wisdom of God from youth. And remembering the Creator in the days of one's youth also should translate into perspective. And that, to me, is one of the greatest things you can get from the book of Ecclesiastes. The sooner that a person realizes in their youth that all kind of worldly pursuits that one might put priority on and spend all their time on and attention and focus on, all those are vanity. They're vanity. I'm glad I understood that from youth. I had a history teacher that thought I was throwing away my life by becoming a gospel preacher. And he said, don't sell yourself short and others enough to know that to live life as a preacher of the gospel was not going to be selling myself short if I didn't use my education in some worldly manner. And certainly I've never regretted that. But the sooner that you can understand helps you to make choices in life and good choices, and ones that keep in mind the vanity of life under the sun. Our time is up, and so we'll look forward, Lord willing, to finishing this out, this discussion, and sadly talking about how the body deteriorates from its youth, and that a person needs certainly to remember God before they get to that point.